Hi everyone, welcome back to another exciting episode of the Training Science Podcast. Today, I had the pleasure of speaking with my friend Chris Domogala, a pretty experienced professional in the world of football with extensive experience in both the Premier League in England and Germany's top leagues. Our conversation today centers on his training methodologies, particularly against the backdrop of England's demanding leagues and their notoriously tight game schedule. We dive into the critical role of monitoring player responses and the true needs for recovery strategies. Chris also shares the core bits of his training schedule philosophy, his overarching approach to training, and how these elements altogether contribute to effective player management. With insight gathered from an impressive career, this discussion is full of highly valuable lessons that I'm sure you will immensely enjoy.
Hello and welcome to the Training Science Podcast. I'm Paul Larson.
And I am Martin Buscheid.
And we're excited to be your hosts. Together, we're going to be exploring both the science of training and its application in sport.
We've spent the last 20 years researching and applying the science at the coalface of high-performance sport, from elite clubs, professional athletes, and Olympic programs.
But it's going to be here on the Training Science Podcast that we're going to take that experience and provide you with what my colleague Martin likes to call a no-bullshit approach to how we apply the science in the real world.
And because the context always matters more than the content.
So let's get into today's podcast.
Hi everyone, welcome back on the Training Science Podcast. Today, I'm super happy to have my friend Chris Domogala with us. Chris, how are you?
Yeah, well, thank you, Martin. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
No, awesome. And I'm glad we managed to fit the episode in between the few games that you guys are playing in Leeds and your recent surgery as well. We had to find the slot. How is this knee rehabbing, by the way?
No, it's going well. Thank you. So done a few weeks ago, my lateral meniscus, full repair. Obviously, my role is just personally annoying, but it's going well. Made the best out of it, really, and it's more so another experience to add to the shelf, really.
And on that, you know, we were discussing that offline before, but I was expecting that. Can you just tell us how many days you took off after surgery? That's really, to me, a reflection of the requirement of the league, you know, and you can't take 6 weeks off when you are coach assistant like that.
Yeah, I just said that there were senior people in the club that were surprised I was back in quite quickly and didn't take those 6 weeks off. But so it happened on a match day minus one. It was fortunate that the medical team of Leeds could sort me quite quickly with all the assessments and so on. So I got the surgery a few days later and then just took the week off, really. Missed a few training sessions and three games because there was a midweek game week. But the week after, I felt good enough and confident to go back in. And just being a support around, obviously with delegating all the active work on the pitch to my colleagues. But I felt like after a week, I need to go back in and play my role, really.
Yes. And that's definitely a big part of the chat today, you know, about talking about this rentless league and the demands, both not only players but staff as well. So that's a super intro about the rhythm that you guys are going through at Leeds. But maybe just before we dive in into the question I have for you, would you mind just give us a little bit of intro about yourself, where you're coming from, what you've done, and now the current role in Leeds?
Yeah, sure. So obviously growing up, did myself lots of sports, played football as a kid, did some martial arts over the years, ended up in swimming, did that on an amateur level, but always enjoyed that training side around it in every sport. And then decided at some point that I want to progress my way in physiotherapy. So that was what I did my first degree in, and worked as a physiotherapist, but always had that interest in injury prevention, the training science part that comes along with the medical part of it. So worked as a physio, as I said, and supported some local amateur and semi-professional teams as athletic performance coach. So whilst in Germany the physiotherapy was quite hands-on, I was always intrigued by the hands-off side and the active side, the training side of it. So did my bachelor's in strength and conditioning and performance coaching, and then worked in the clinic supporting various associations and individual athletes. When I then got the chance to work as a physio for Borussia Dortmund's B team, but that was obviously the physiotherapy role, and that was my hometown club. That was the club I always looked after and went to the games. So that was like a dream coming true to be in, you know, involved in that surrounding. And then I think a couple of years later, when one of my colleagues left to a Bundesliga club who worked as a athletic performance coach, I suddenly got the opportunity to step up and work more in the hands-off area, and yeah, could bring my ideas in there and took this challenge on. And since then, I feel that was the right pathway for me. Obviously, I met Daniel Farke then, who became the successor of David Wagner at Borussia's B team. And when he got the opportunity to work at Norwich in England, he asked me if I would like to join his coaching staff. And as I always dreamed of working in an English-speaking country at that time, that was a fantastic opportunity. And also with the perspective to maybe at some point work in the Premier League, which at that time I felt was the best league in the world. So did to make a hard call because I've just signed a long-term contract with Dortmund. But I felt for the family, for my personal development, that was the right thing. And then, yeah, been grateful for that opportunity. And since then, working with Daniel and his other coaching staff together.
Awesome. And I'm glad you mentioned as well your background being starting as a physio. And I'm going to have some questions as well about this background, because I'm going to have more specific questions about the journey and the changes in clubs. So just mention a little bit after Norwich, you went back to Germany, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we went back to the Bundesliga, to Borussia Mönchengladbach, worked there for a season, and then obviously got the opportunity to work at Leeds. So we're now, since beginning of the season, working for Leeds United, back in the Championship.
Yeah, that's where you guys are now. So maybe as a start, and we'll definitely dive, as I said, about all those specific questions about how you guys are managing the load. And because when you were in Norwich, you were already, when we kind of met and started to interact more, I remember we had those discussions about the rhythm and so on. But maybe more like a more holistic question first now. And that's a question I always have for people like you that have already multiple experience from different clubs, different levels, different leagues, different leagues in terms of level, but also countries and so on. And it looks like every time we had like informal chats between us, it looks like you always had smooth integration to the clubs you work with. You were always telling me how good the people were in the clubs you guys came in, how you managed to leverage the staff that was already in place and so on. And as you know, I sometimes had different experience on my side, you know. So I would say, you know, what can you just comment on? Maybe it's your approach, you just been lucky that you were always welcome. You know, there's always there can be some friction between the permanent staff, the transition staff and so on. So what's your take on that? And what would be maybe the keys for successful integration, I would say, if you can share something with us?
Yeah, sure. I'll be honest, I always felt I've been lucky in those situations. But obviously, as you mentioned, we had the conversations, and then looking back and reflecting on it, I believe that it's also always about how you step into such an environment. And I think obviously is a different role when you're coming with a manager and a coaching staff into an existing setup. Usually as a club, I think you believe you hire the best people. So stepping into such an environment, you believe you have really good practitioners on site. And I think it's then more about the characters and about the soft skills in between and the mood around the place that you're stepping in there. So I always felt that by coming in, letting all the guards down and being open and honest about, you know, where I'm coming from, what we want to approach and what we're trying to achieve, to I always felt like I've tried to engage everybody who was already there and then find what's working well. And then obviously over the years, there were occasionally the situations where people couldn't engage with it or couldn't commit to it. But I never felt like that was just down to me or just down to them. It was more like, sounds silly, but maybe just the wrong time and the wrong place for what was going to be achieved. But yeah, I felt stepping into the different environments, I think it helps if you're working with just, you know, very, very open personalities that are probably critical, but, you know, open for discussions and open for what you want to do as long as it does make sense.
Yes, yes. And how you guys have kind of done this integration with the different clubs in terms of the different staff. So you mentioned the head coach, yourself. So acting as a performance manager, you know, is it really you that is in charge of the plug with the permanent staff? Like I'm talking about the physios, the conditioning coaches, the dogs, or the coach himself goes into that, or really they say, okay, Chris, that's your role to make sure that we work well with those guys. How do you set this up?
So I think in the first place, my part in our coaching staff role is yes, to collect all the information, to work closely and maybe the closest with the medical and the performance staff and making sure that from what we want to do within our philosophy, that this goes all in the right direction, but then also be like a little bit the transistor or the buffer between all that support staff and the manager. So to reduce the amount of conversations he probably has to take, like the corridor chats and so on, that are on specific topics, but that are maybe not guiding you straight forward, so that he can have the conversations that are really like the decision making ones and so on. So that is, I think, my position in our coaching staff, and obviously with the expertise of the fitness side of the players within our training philosophy. But then over the last three clubs, my role changed because at Norwich, I think also the sporting director wanted to build something from scratch. So the roles and the personnel changed a lot after we came in. So there I had more like the head of performance role, overseeing almost the physio and the sports science field, connecting them and really form a department out of that again. But then as it grew and as the service obviously got to the stage where we've all felt it needed to be, then the responsibilities were given back to like the head of medical and physio and the head of sports science for more autonomy. Whilst last season in Gladbach and now at Leeds, they're already, you know, really good people in that position, in the head of athletic performance and the head of performance and medicine role. So I don't feel like I need to be too strong on that side in managing staff. I just focus on what's necessary to connect the coaching staff with the other staff, and then obviously within my field to making sure that we can work them within our training philosophy, but just being a good colleague and bringing everything in line almost rather than managing top down, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, of course I get. That's why I was using this term of plugging a little bit, like, you know, there's a plug between the permanent staff and you guys, and you just probably put the level of depth you go into that depending on the structure of the club and the needs. As you say, Norwich, they probably ask you to be way more involved in the club side of the things that you have to be now. And it's probably also a skill to know where to stop. I mean, in terms of being really into making decisions at the club level and so on. So yeah, that's really what I wanted to hear from you, and makes sense the way you describe it.
I feel that in my role now, working with Daniel and the other coaching staff now for so many years, you get a good understanding of how your practices are, how your routines are, in what speed you want to implement your methodology and your philosophy. So whilst I've been on the other side of bits when, you know, a new manager comes in, but you've been already staff of the club. It always, there is that time where everybody needs to figure out, okay, how is he ticking? How does he want to work things and so on? As you say, that's probably then the advantage I have to transmit those informations quite quickly into the staff and can make them sensible or sensitive around certain topics or non-negotiables for him. So that maybe errors don't occur in the first place so often, and we can straight jump on the fast track almost, where everybody feels like we know what he wants to be delivered and we know what he's expecting as a standard.
Yeah, no, exactly. And can we dive a little bit into that? You know, what would be the very important information, or let's say training approach, or the thing that you really want to make sure this is secured, like, you know, the big rocks of you guys coming into a new environment, and okay, that's what you need from the staff, that's what you want to be able to do, and then the rest will come with time, the rest might change and so on.
Hey everyone, obviously if you're tuning into this one, you're a huge fan of Martin's, as I am. As you probably know, one of the things that Martin's known best for in the field is his application of science to performance in the sport of football. So what we thought we'd do to help spread Martin's influence a little bit more is to offer a new football performance bundle. What we're doing for the bundle is offering the full HIT science course that Martin leads, plus Martin's football specific HIT course, as well as the all-new science and application of the anaerobic speed reserve, which Martin plays a key role in teaching how he specifically implements ASR across his individual players at the highest level of the game. So we're taking nearly half of the price off of these courses and bundling them up for only $990. So if you're as passionate about this area as we are, there's never been a better time to upskill yourself with the football performance bundle. Just head on over to HIT Science and you'll see the new product featured there. And now back to the podcast.
So I would say probably the major thing is always like a training schedule. Silly as it sounds, but for every staff, for every player, that is the first question is, oh, what's your training schedule looking like? So that they can arrange everything around that really as well and be prepared for what's coming. So like what training schedule are we coming in with? How is our preparation for a game looking like? Is it a 3-day lead, a 5-day lead, is it a 4-day lead, and so on. I think the other bits are then obviously the philosophy we're bringing in and the standards we're expecting, really. So simple things. I mean, working in that environment now for years, it doesn't even occur special to me, but it's simple things. It's like really that you have an open environment where everybody can express themselves, you know, but you keep it real, keep everybody accountable. But then that certain behaviors are just which you and me think are normal, which needs to be expressed in such an environment to be, no, this is what we want to see. So being focused, you know, when it's work time, being strategic about things, such kind of things, really. So it's more about coming in the scheduling side, the philosophy side, but then also the mentality within that building, that everybody is really in line and speaking the same language.
Yeah, no, awesome. And in terms of more information on players, I don't know, again, fitness test results, screening, injury, are there things that you're really looking for, especially now? I mean, you know, we talked about your physio background. Are there things that you really need to know before you start to train heavy, before you start to implement some type of training at the individual level, or
yes, for sure. Obviously, the last three clubs we walked in a preseason scenario. So in our first year, I always let the testing completely down to the permanent staff that was already at the club, because I felt they have the best understanding of the players that are in the club at this point of the year. And then just evaluating what measurements have been done, looking at the test results, and then figure out, do I need anything else? Do we need anything on top? Or then in the future seasons, are we overloading the players with tests we're not really basing then our training on. So it's definitely important. I think you always want to know, okay, what's the training history of a player? What's the medical history of a player? What's his movement competencies, his strength setup, but then also his historic fitness state. For sure you want to know that, because also after the years, I know how our sessions will look like and how preseason will look like, and almost you know what scenario you're expecting to stepping in. And then the goal is to just close the gap as much as possible to evade any to avoid any big shocks which can catch you up in a later stage.
Mm-hmm. And did you happen that you found yourself in an environment where you wanted to do more than maybe the players were used to, and then you find yourself of having to adapt maybe the intensity of the training session or do less, you know, because maybe another style of play, another culture of the club, and you guys coming in willing to do something different than what was done, and or you've been happy with the players' stages, habits, fitness? You know, it's always the fact that when there are differences in culture at some stage.
Yeah. I think in general, I've always been happy with the state, to be honest. There are always the one-off guys where you think, come on, mate, you could have done a little bit more in the off-season, knowing in which environment you're stepping in. But in general, I would say I always felt happy around it. I think the biggest shock from my experience was when we first started at Norwich. So coming from the German training system and how you start your preseason there, stepping into Norwich, and Daniel Farke has been the first foreign manager in club history. So everybody needed to adapt to foreign stuff and just a different philosophy. But I think the training shock there from the feedback I got was probably the biggest. But then over time, everybody adapted well, and all of a sudden, no one is speaking about it again. It's then probably again when you get new players in that give you feedback, oh, this is tough, haven't trained as tough before. But, you know, we feel after a while everybody's adapting, and then it becomes normal, and then it's not tough anymore because this is what you do. Yeah, so I would say that was probably the biggest shock, so sad, from a feedback perspective, training load-wise. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Leeds, when we came in, they had a reputation of training very hard under the managers before, and had a certain profile of high intensity within their squad. And I think that helped also us massively coming in and bring them back on a level where they used to be before. And there was a lot of appreciation for tough training sessions and intense training sessions.
Yeah, I think as you said, about that's very important, I guess. I'm sure it's very important that you know the playing style of the previous coach, you know the game model, you know a little bit how people were used to not only train but play as well, so that you can adapt your expectations from the group. And when you said about you guys were being the first German staff in Norwich, without going into any secret, but can you share anything that where you really had to make a change, or what would be the German culture into the English culture? Anything that was really a change, as you said?
Yeah, obviously for us everything was new. Yeah. So that is something where I need to adapt to, even at small stuff like the level of jokes and you know the language obviously you've learned, but then you know there are sayings which you haven't heard before and you need to get used to and how to take then some jokes, for example. Mm-hmm. And then just the whole cultural bits, but that was never an issue, to be honest. That was fairly easy. I think from the other side was probably then, as I said, the scheduling bit. I think some of the lads were used to have a minimum of 2 days off within the week, and all of a sudden we're coming along and you know they got 1 day off in a week if the schedule allowed, and you know how the championship at that time was and even still is now. Sometimes you're not getting a day off for 16 days in a row. So I think that was something everybody needed to adapt to. The length of training sessions was, when I recall it now, something everybody needed to adapt to. And I think there was a lot of where maybe in the first place the working hours increased until they reached then a common level. And I think then everything got on very well. But it's like, I'm not sure if the analogy is right, but you know, you're going into a country on holiday where you've never been before. You probably need 2 days to adapt to where you are and what you can do, what you can't do, and how you get to the things you want to get to. But after 2 days, you almost feel like, yeah, I know this place. And I think in football, it I always felt was the same. It sounds silly and it's almost like just footballing people are saying that, but it feels like such a fast moving environment that if you're in there for 2 days, you feel like some of the people you know for, you know, half of your life, which is, you know, funny, but that sometimes how it feels in good environments. And so that was in there as well.
Yeah. Now, as you said, everything happened so quickly and there's so much happening all the time that I keep saying what happens in this environment in a week, sometimes happens in a month or two in another context. So no, I get that. No, very, very good. And when you say about the jokes, I can relate to that as well, you know, that getting a feel of the environment and the culture. And I guess what you say about the 2 days off, that must be probably the hardest bit. And now to be a bit more specific about more loading, training, this kind of stuff, 2 days off. Now, I guess that's what a lot of clubs are still doing in England. You know, we even talk sometimes about the English model when sometimes it's the day minus three that is off. When in other culture and models, day minus three is the day where people train the most, you know. So what's your take on that, having seen a little bit all the models, and what's your preference or the things that you have to adapt as well?
Yeah, so obviously working in the setup we're working in now for years, I must say I feel very comfortable with the setup we're having and the philosophy we're having. So if it's a Saturday game week, we always have a 4 day lead into the game, so that on the fifth day is the game. We usually have the match day plus one is our recovery day. So it's a six day working week, as you can say. Within that week, it's a periodization of extensive, intensive work, tapering, and then game preparation. For us, it was always, and for me also personally, it's always important, you know, have the group together, spend time together, because with what you want to achieve in the games, you know, you need to rely on everybody. And that is like, one of the philosophies of us, and especially the managers, you play how you train. So, and that takes part into all of it. Saying that, if, for example, we have a longer turnaround, Friday to Saturday, yes, then you get your 2 days off, but you get it front loaded and not within the training week. So we still stick to our 4 day lead into the game, but would allow the extra day in that extra time before we start our preparation. And then in the midweek game scenario, that's always about preparation and recovery. So we always are in for recovery on the next day. We're always in for preparation on the day before. But whenever the schedule allows, then we want to take a day off if we can, to just for mental shutdown, really, for players, but also for staff. Working in a league where you have a relentless schedule with 46 games in the league and then two cup competitions, I think you need that breather really to also sometimes not do the same way to work and be in the same environment, even if you're not working on feet, but just have that mental, you know, recovery side of it to being then really motivated for the next step. But for us, it has always been like, no, when we can train, we want to train. And we want to have the group together and we want to have the feeling that we're preparing best for the game and not just turn up a day before a game and feeling like we're not ready for the competition, really. But that's just us saying that. I think this is our and my philosophy, and we're feeling very confident with that and very comfortable with that, knowing that there are different ways to achieve, you know, success. But in the end of the day, you need to feel that the setup you're working in is working for you and working for everybody around you. And as soon as you keep consistency in there, I see you can do different scenarios. But that's the way how we worked.
Yeah, No, of course, as there's always, as we keep saying, yeah, there's many ways to skin the cat, but it has to be your physiology as well. So that you can't do half of one approach and then half of the other. Otherwise, you just get losing parts. So you have to say something, you believe in it, and then just go through it. And talking about all those games and so on. So would that be maybe the biggest challenge for you guys, the number of games and just having to play and repeat and repeat and balancing the recovery, making sure those are not playing still play and so on? So I guess would be the biggest challenge, number of games?
Yeah, for sure. Especially first time coming to England, that was the biggest shock. Just the amount of games. Obviously, Bundesliga, you play 34 games. In the B team, I believe we had two games more, but you're around that as well. So 34, 36 games. All of a sudden, you're getting to a league where you're playing 10 games more. You have also two cup competitions, realistically. So you're playing minimum two games more, expecting to survive the first one or two rounds. And then you don't have like a winter break. And that is really where the schedule is the most dense. That was also a big change in how to approach things. So yeah, definitely. But I think I enjoy now having that many games and having short turnarounds, because you know you're prepared and you can fully concentrate on recovery, utilizing all the recovery resources you have and the ideas you have, and then prepare a team again. As long as you've done a good preparation before you hit those congested fixtures. I always enjoy that period of, you know, game after game after game. Although I believe the coach is always looking forward to weeks where they have a full training week and can prepare the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you end up, I guess, for the players that actually most of the time in the starting 11 or those who play, they don't train much in the end. So the question of the back of that is it just recovery, or you still try when you can to give them a little bit of something they need once they don't play? Well, if they play every three matches, there's nothing to do. But when, for any reason, they are not selected or red card or only sub, would you say, okay, now those guys, they've played four or five games in a row. They finally don't play congested. I'm going to let them recover. Or it's an opportunity to finally train something that we could not train for the last 2 weeks. So then I'm still doing something. So how do you balance that?
Yeah, good question. So in general, with the regular starters, I think, as you say, the focus is always recovery. If you have a Saturday week, for example, they still train the same training sessions everybody else is training within a week. But then, as you say, if there's a scenario that they're not selected or they pick up a ban or anything, I think how I always done it and how we do it now is you're looking at their chronic load and on their internal responses to that load over time. And you just try to figure out in which state are they at the moment. So are they in a well-trained state where you actually can keep going, and you try to give them the consistent workload so that they stay on that wave almost? Or are they in a state where they overtrained, undertrained? Probably not undertrained if they played all the games, but are they needing maybe a little bit more of recovery to just come down from a peak before they can head into like a fresh state? But that's where we're then utilizing our monitoring and our testing to find out, okay, in which state are players like? Is there an element of a chronic fatigue that kicks in or acute fatigue that kicks in that needs to be addressed? Or in an ideal scenario, no, they don't have that. They're just not selected or playing. So we need to make sure they're staying in that flow they are in to be ready again when they are selected or can play.
Mm-hmm. And mentioning your monitoring approach, can you share a little bit some of the tests, the variable, the metrics that you are really looking at To monitor players?
So obviously the common ones, external loads, internal response, so means the GPS data, the heart rate data is collected, looking at our ratios, but then also doing our twice in a week testing for readiness, so for their rate of force development. So we're doing IMTP, were doing hamstring adductor EMGs on the bench, and then using a system where we do hip rotation and adductor squeezes and just track their rate of force development, but also their absolute strength over time to just give us an indicator where they are. So that are probably the most common ones we're looking at. And then obviously the subjective wellness questionnaires, I believe everybody is collecting just in context to the objective data. Is that mirroring their subjective feeling? And then all of, I would say, these 10, 12 metrics, you try to formulate a picture where you can read from and make suggestions of what you believe is a good intervention or a good training stimulus. If it's a successful one, you will find out when it works. And I've had all in the past already situations where something occurs which you haven't seen before, and even retrospectively, you couldn't really track where it's coming from. But that's not saying we're doing everything you need to do or looking at everything you must look at. There are so many variables, but I feel focusing on those elements that occur in a regular basis and where you have control of give us the best chance to formulate interventions.
Yeah, no, awesome. And you get a nice mix of objective, subjective, and external, internal. So I think that sounds pretty solid to me. And as you said, it's often really related to the context and also what the players have been used to. Like you mentioned, mid-tight pull, isometric mid-tight pull. That's something you see a lot in more like a sports where you have a more upper body engagement, like rugby, Australian football. Everyone kind of does that. You see maybe that less a bit in football. Maybe people would probably maybe do more jumps, these kind of things. So I think it's whatever you have a test that you're able to repeat and you have reference points works, then it's finding the right adjustment between what's possible, what buying of the players. What's your experience with the... But for example, if you just talk about the mid-tight pull, you know, you get a good buying with that. You had to convince, it took time to do. Can you do it with the whole squad, just some players?
Yeah, that's obviously a discussion I always like in those environments, and which we also had this year. Is like, okay, what is everybody believing is a good assessment, and everybody can buy into, because if half of the staff says this is a good one, but the other one isn't great, and the other one says the other way around, then you're almost in a conflict situation. So you want to have a common language, because you need to engage the players, because IMTP or jumps, probably half of them don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
But if you have the culture and they're buying in, so we're doing jumps as well, and also regularly. But we had the discussion about, okay, what do we really want to achieve with those testing? So we want to tackle it from a central nervous system, a neuromuscular system perspective. We want to have a feedback on their state. And then we decided, based on the experience of the staff that was already in and the influences I brought in, that maybe the IMTP is one which can give us, with the population we're working in now, maybe the least deviations, because the breakout actions there, not sure if that's the right word, but the variances they can show us are maybe smaller than, you know, the jumps. There's always someone or sore ankle after a game, so we're not doing that. With the IMTP, we felt comfortable. No, you can still do that because you don't get a joint stress, but we're still getting an answer about your central nervous system. So this is how we ended up there, rather than doing, for example, on a match day plus one, doing jumps.
Yeah, it works. So the mid-tight pull, you do it on plus one?
Yeah, we do it on plus one. We then have our bi-weekly minus four, but then every week coming into a minus four or minus three, depending on if it's a 3-day or 4-day lead into a game, depending on the schedule, we're doing then also counter-movement jumps and squeezes for the groins and hip rotation.
Okay. No, awesome. And you also mentioned EMG, which is something that I got almost passionate about the last couple of years in Lille. You know, tried a lot of different protocols, but never had the experience to do it very regularly at the squad level. You know, I've been using that more on players with recurrent injuries so that we can follow and track a small group of players. So have you pushed that to group level as well?
One of my colleagues working at Leeds here, he's a physio, Derek Carter. He's taking the lead in the EMG assessment. So he's doing that every match day plus one with the starting lineup. And then we do it on bespoke days with individual players in a training week. So obviously we have the baselines of, and then we just want to see, okay, how far off are they? How fatigued are they? Where are they sitting there? And then how quickly are they picking up before the next game or the training week? So I believe he's doing obviously the back lines or hamstrings, but again, doing parts of the adductor group as well. And that is happening every match day plus one.
Okay, super nice, super nice. Okay, and you feel you get value of from the assessment as well? I'm sure, I guess, if you keep doing it, that you get something from it, but...
Yeah, 100%. We feel we're getting something of it, and especially with the guys that have a greater shift off their baseline. It's then to measure how quickly they can pick up back to baseline. And then that is probably where interventions also take place. So, for example, a few weeks ago, we had the two players that were down quite massively compared to what they usually show after a game and then moving into the next game. So this is where we then felt, okay, they needed more physio support. They needed more control on their hip and pelvic alignment. They probably need a little bit more activation time to allow them to be ready for training, but then also to monitor their training a little bit more closely. And then on that occasion with one player, as he was quite high in his acute chronic sprint load anyway, we also adjusted then his training loads within certain metrics just to allow him not to dive in too deep into the red zone, really hoping that we keep him safe and sound moving into the next game so he can perform safely there.
Yeah, makes sense. And on that, how much do you use, how do you use all this information when it comes to adjusting maybe the load, if it's still a plus three, minus four, where those guys are still showing some signs of not having fully recovered, you know, like typical traffic lights color, he does full, he doesn't do anything, he does half, or what's the approach here?
So in general, the mindset of the performance and medical department at Leeds is train if you can.
Yeah.
And that's the main target, to get every player on the pitch and train if possible and if sensible. So every day there will be a medical and performance meeting where we go through the players, injured players and fit players, and discuss certain things. Everybody has access to the dashboards where all the metrics are stored and where, as you say, like a traffic light system is on. And then again, everybody's free to bring their own opinion in about management of the players, because sometimes it's even those small things where designated physio has also heard more bits about their psychological state, what's actually going around in their private environment, which all of a sudden makes sense in things they're reporting and why we probably need to have a deeper conversation here or prepare the player in a different way. But then in those meetings, we're deciding, okay, what's the training looking like? This is what I present. And then we're discussing, okay, with which player we're not feeling comfortable if he's performing the whole session, for what reasons, and what is our adjustments to it to give him the most group time if possible. And that's always the common questions in those discussions to then achieve an outcome. And then usually after those performance and medical meeting, I'm then going to the coaching staff and the head coach and say, okay, this is this players we are fully available. We have a couple we need to look after under those circumstances. Yes, no, maybe. Usually it's fine. And then we plan or we adjust in the training sessions based on the numbers of the players there. But the topics are always clear, and the qualities we want to achieve in those training sessions are always clear before those conversations. And it's just then more about the deep end, so the drill selection, because that's based on the players. And then obviously at times you have a player that is not able to train, or where you feel it doesn't make sense for them to train. And then you have an alternative plan, like a medical and performance management plan. But the general aim is making everybody available for training.
Yeah. And would you guys use, because there's also very different approaches about more a bit of a cross training for players that are not available to do the whole session, but they can still keep more or less the load dynamic, you know? So yeah. an extreme option, which I can buy into that, but I know some practitioners don't. You might pull out a player from last part of the session because he might be too intense on the neuromuscular side, so you want to preserve him. But you still want to get the minutes and the loading, so you might send him on the bike and or some generic run. So he keeps the same dynamic, but it's more safe and secure. And other would say, no, if he doesn't do the football specific, then it's done and he might do more tomorrow to catch up, for example, you know?
No, I'm exactly with you there. And this is probably the most likely scenario you will find in player management, is that they start a session with a full group, and then there is a certain element of drill you pull them from and give them an alternative. I think a lot of the guys that pick up anything joint-wise, ankle, knee, or maybe with their groins and hip flexors, is if we're on a day where we end the session with some condensed finishing. So they join all that bit, but as you say, the mechanical load, muscular side of it in the finishing drill would be too much, or the impact on the joints where swelling or soreness is too big. So you pull them from there, they don't join the group in the finishing, but they do something else instead, which is then relatable to their position, to just give them either time on feet, if they can tolerate it or need it, or sometimes you just scrap it completely and just take him out of the last bit, let him do the cool down, and that's it. And this is probably the most likeliest adaptation to a full training session for a player, I would say.
Yeah. No. Awesome. And who's making the last call on what this player adaptation would be? Would be likely you, I guess, with the coach?
Yeah, that's most likely than me in the discussions with the head coach. There might be a scenario where we do something where it's important that the player is on the pitch. That probably can be something tactical, set place wise. You really are, depending on the understanding of the player and the group, you just need him out there, and you sacrifice almost the most ideal scenario for the group feeling. And that's in the discussion between us. And obviously he makes the final call, but he's very good to work with and following recommendations regarding the loading of the players. I mean, at the end of the day, we all have the common goal that we have the best players available for the match day and have every player fully fit or closest fit to where they can perform their best to have an impact on the game. But in those meetings, it's not like that I have a complete different view and just overrule everybody else. It's more than when I have a different view, I express my reasoning behind it. And I would say in 95% of the times, there is the same mindset within that group, and we agree on things. And to be honest, it's most of the times it's more weighing off risk and reward rather than making a call for one or the other.
Hey there, training science enthusiasts. No doubt you'll be aware of Athletica AI, the AI training tool we've been working on since 2015 with the idea of creating an AI coach for endurance athletes using the HIIT Science training principles. We have adaptive training plans available for runners, cyclists, triathletes, and duathletes. You simply plug in your event, when it's going to occur, connect up your wearable, and crack on with your training, where you're going to get sessions that are going to adapt daily no matter what you do. This is available for both athletes that would rather self-coach, as well as coaches that want an assistant. Unlimited session variety with our workout wizard, invisible monitoring and zone updates with our power profile, alongside our latest tool, the workout reserve, which shows you how deep you've gone in any one session relative to the past. That's pretty important if you want to stay injury-free, maintaining training consistency, which we all know is the number one principle that leads to personal best outcomes. Just check out our blog for all the success stories. And now we're becoming truly AI innovative with GPT integration for session analysis. Mind-blowing. Remember that our coach platform is free alongside a free course coaches can take to learn how to leverage it to be better at your job and even to take on more athletes. So head on over to athletica.ai and trial for free for 2 weeks. You like what you see? Jump on board with our special year-end offer exclusive for podcast listeners of 25% off an annual athlete plan with the code YEAREND25. That's only till the end of this year. That code again, all caps, no spaces, YEAREND25 at checkout. Look forward to seeing you there. And now back to the podcast.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Where's the place for, I don't want to go through in the whole topic of player development, but at least on more the technical, tactical aspect at the individual level, you know, would you add bits before, after sessions? Would it be specific session, maybe in the afternoon, or, and then how you manage the load of that as well?
Yeah. So in general, we try to cover a lot of technical aspects within our training setup anyway. But obviously you have players that need to develop, young players, players where you feel like they have a little bit more potential in certain areas. But that would usually then find place after a session, or if it doesn't fit into that surrounding of physical, mechanical loading on that day, that would then take place on a day where that loading is reduced and you can implement it. So usually those assigned days for us are post-session of a -3 or it's on a -2 day.
Yeah, so it's kind of complementary and you have a bit of more room for... Yeah, if ever you do a bit too much, you should not compromise the freshness for the game and so on.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is also very likely if that is a player that is taking part in the match day plus one session outside, to do it then within that session and to prescribe a little bit more player development drills within that session already, but then doing a top up there because the next day is off and on -4 you're starting later. So there's more time for recovery before coming in. What we don't want is to compromise with any extra loading the state of the player when they need to compete with the rest of the team for their spots.
Yeah. No, that makes total sense. No, awesome. Yeah, I'm glad because in the end we touched a little bit in all the parts of the week in between your recovery, your monitoring and this piece. So I think it's a nice overview of the macro cycle, which is, as we always say, the base of everything we kind of do. Just to kind of not wrapping up yet, of course, we're getting a bit through, drawing a bit more in your career and experience, you know, and that's a question I always kind of ask to every guest, you know, are there training approach or things that you believed a lot 15, 20 years ago and you said that no, that doesn't work anymore, things that you dropped on the way, things you really changed your mind about?
Good question. I mean, you mentioned that before speaking into the lead up to this conversation. I was thinking about it. Definitely the approach has changed, let's say evolved over the years. I think I wouldn't say there was anything in there I've done in my earlier years. I wouldn't do anymore nowadays. But I think with the experience I made over the years, I've recognized and accepted more that the evaluation of the environment you're in is probably dictating more what you can do and how you approach your own philosophy in implementing in the environment, rather than just coming in like a whirlwind and this is what we want to do and here you go, and almost losing half of the people on the way because they're I'm not sure if overwhelmed is the right word, but you need to buy in. So this is probably where I would say earlier days, yeah, this is what we want to do. Here you go, full program, non-negotiable, we're doing this. And it's still most of the elements are there, but now it's like, okay, let's see, what can we do? What is reasonable and how can we fit it in at the end of the day? And I think this is also the journey last season showed. We started with bits and ended up doing almost everything we discussed at the beginning of the season. But it wasn't something where you could say we do everything at the beginning because we believe we would have lost probably a lot of players in the early stage and probably would have never got them back in the right condition. But from a training quality perspective, I'm definitely more now into the recovery element than I've been years ago. I think then everything was more about training and training impulse rather than also diving so deep into recovery elements and the assessments. But otherwise, I think my strength training methodology is still the same. My movement capacity or methodology, whatever you want to call it, idea is still the same. And probably say what's definitely the same is the way how I approach colleagues and the people around me. So maybe they say different, I don't know, but I feel like that there has been some consistency, but the soft skills around it and how to get there maybe has changed a little bit.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that's the way you mature as you gain experience. And of course, you know, that's the theme of the podcast, but you just have to appreciate the context, you know. So I'm glad you just went through that, because that's so much of our point with Paul from the beginning. So yeah, I'm glad we kind of went through this as well. Awesome. Maybe to finish off, you know, I have a few more personal questions for you, you know, more first at the professional level, and then I have more at the personal. At the professional level, you know, what's next now, you know, with all the experience you have with the different leagues, you came in England to play in the Premier League and so on. So what would be next for you, or what the things you would, maybe experience you would like to have at the moment?
I think in the short term it's just hopefully having success in the environment we're in now. So everybody is hoping and wishing that Leeds can promote back to the Premier League, and to experience that league again, being competitive there. That is the short term. What's next? I think that's everybody's goal here now. I think in general, my professional goal is probably just pushing further and at the same time being happy, you know, in the setup we're in. I absolutely enjoy working with that coaching staff and then working for that manager. In the different environments we've been in, that has always been a consistent element and always something enjoyable. And I hope that this setup will continue. But then my own practice is to push forward and, you know, as you say, mature further, you know, have different challenges and just engage them and grow with it. That's literally what next. I don't have literally don't have that bucket list of, oh, I want to work here or I want to work there. And this is something I want to explore next. It's more, I'd like to think that working in a high performance environment, the next thing is coming anyway. The next challenge is coming anyway, and it's more about, you know, realizing what the challenge is and accepting it and having an open mindset in approaching that. Maybe sounds silly, but since I've been a teenager or so, I've liked the group in music. I've listened a lot to when I was younger, but there's still one part of lyrics that sticks to my mind is, you know, that they have one quote and that follows me since ever is like, you know, whatever tomorrow brings, be there with open eyes and open arms. And this is how I approach literally not only the professional side, but also my personal life.
Awesome. No, that's super cool. I like the, who's the band?
It's from Incubus. So the song is Drive. Yeah, I listened to that. Was it rock alternative or something? Listened to that when I was in school.
Yeah.
But awesome. Yeah, that always sticked to me.
Okay, that's super cool, and that's transitioned for the more on the personal side. But you went through that anyway. I'm always curious, you know, and every time we catch up, I ask about the kids, because you have four kids, and you know, I have two, and I always thought it was enough. So it's more like, how do you, again, you manage to find this balance? And I've never used work life balance, because work is definitely part of the life, even more in football, you know. But how do you balance that, and you see yourself still in this hectic world? Or maybe at some stage you're going to think that maybe you find another role so you can zoom out a little bit, spend more time with them, or, you know, how do you get that? How do you go through that at the moment?
Yeah, I believe I balance it well. I think better said, my wife balances it very well. So she's very supportive, obviously, which allows me to work in the field I have a lot of passion for. As you say, work is part of life, and maybe it's because we're working in sports, but when you're passionate about something, it doesn't occur like work, really. It's something you enjoy and you want to do. Obviously, you have the scheduling and you're away, and you know where you can't be at home, but for us it works. The setup, you know, my wife and me created with the kids, it works for us, and we always said as long as it works, we're happy to on that journey in this field. Surely there might be the time where we feel, you know, the kids don't enjoy it as much as we do anymore, or we feel different about it, and then we might to rethink the situation. But at the moment, with every move we made, we've been happy. We've enjoyed it. Moving first to England and to Norwich turned out. So we moved there with two kids and came back with four. So that was a place like a second home for us, as we've lived there for 5 years. Then moving back to Germany and to Mönchengladbach, we were just an hour away from home. So that was like moving home and having more family time with like the parents and grandparents and so on. And now moving back to England felt like, oh, we're moving to a place or to a country that felt home for a long time, but now we settle in well again and it's working. So as long as it's working, we're enjoying it. It's good. And as I said, yes, the kids are chaos at times. I can't deny that, but I have a super supportive wife and she's dealing with all the stress around it. So, yeah, I think I'm very fortunate in those ways and lucky with that.
Awesome. No, excellent. I'm glad that you went through that as well. It's just so much important, you know, to get everything aligned. And yeah, our partners are always key in this aspect. And no, awesome. Yeah, so I can feel it. Yeah, there is some good vibes in the way you describe it. So I'm sure it's you guys make it work, and it's awesome. So congratulations for that as well. All right. Is there anything you wanted to add? And I think otherwise we're going to leave it here, but I'm going to let you the last words, if you don't mind, for today.
Oh, I think we covered a lot. And I just want to thank you again that, you know, of the plenty conversations we had, that, you know, we could now talk about it in this format, and really appreciate it. Not just saying this now we're on here, but I really enjoy listening to both podcasts, and it's such a good content and a way to get just different opinions of practitioners from different fields. It's so exciting every time and really good. So just want to say thank you to being part of that this time now as well.
Easy. No, it's been my pleasure. So again, my turn to thank you for making the time, and good luck. Good luck for the rest of the season and the few games left.
Thank you.
And yeah, we'll be in touch very soon. So thanks for being with us, and thanks for all the cool insight. And yeah, chat soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye bye, Chris.
Hey there, Training Science enthusiasts. If you like what you just heard, be sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at HitScience to keep up with our latest. And if you want to take your knowledge to the next level, visit our website to check out our full online course and textbook on the science and application of high-intensity interval training. Now, if you're a university, club, or sports organization, we've got special packages available for you and your team. Just contact us at info@hitscience.com. And if you want to join our evolution as a field and take your application even further, be sure to check out the HitScience technology platform, Athletica. Visit athletica.ai or follow us on Instagram and Twitter at athletica_AI. Thanks for listening.